If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.
Thank you so much for staying with us. As you know, on a Wednesday, we talk all things legal, and it's a really good time for you to send in your questions, anything. Thabiso Ndubazana is here. She's really, really fantastic with some of those questions that you may have. And if she doesn't know, she will ask the other experts. 086-000-00959. Send in those WhatsApp notes on 063-688-0959. You can also email us, pov@kaya959.co.za, especially if your query is a little bit lengthy, or you can tweet us at Kaya on air, and you can tag me as well at Pimelo Modine. So there is a tweet already that we got in, you know, today sometime, yeah. Tabi Singh, and if we may just go straight to it before we go to the bigger nub of the story. Good evening and welcome.
Good evening. Thank you so much to be back. It's great.
Thank you. So it is from Patricia, yes. Mashale. And it's a very complicated case. It says this particular person was declared dead because her late husband's estate had been stolen by the master's court.
I read that.
The banks and the insurance companies. She has proof of everything. The NPA has failed her. She's very active. She's very much alive as well. And no one is prepared to help her. It's a concern if the NPA has not been able to do anything about this. And when you already implicate the master's court, what then happens? Let's just break down the story for her, please.
So from what we're reading here is that it seems like she was declared dead. Even though she's alive. Mm. So in our country, there's no presumption of death. It has to be a whole high court application. So it means that somebody went to the court to have her declared dead. So the process is not as easy as it seems to have been done.
Okay.
It would be a situation where you need to convince the court.
What do you think happened?
I think that somewhere there must have been some kind of bribery or fraudulent thing that happened within the Department of Home Affairs that issues out these death certificates, because you can only issue that if there's a notice of death and also if there is a notice of death that confirms, and there's a body to confirm that this person is indeed late. So that should have been some kind of syndicate or an inside job that happened in order to ensure that these monies are then brought into whoever the executor was. Well, she actually names the executor in the tweet.
So what let's talk about specifically this case. Yes. What happened in her specific case?
I wish I knew what it was, because we don't have the intricate details. If if she could probably find the case number wherein she was declared dead, the paperwork there would then assist us in letting us know how she ended up being declared dead. Because as soon as you find out that you've been presumed to be dead by virtue of a court order, you need to approach all the relevant institutions, Home Affairs, all of them, to ensure that you notify them that you are still alive. But everything that would have happened as a result of your death, so in other words, when your estate is now being wound up, the people who benefited from your estate, whether they be heirs, whether they be beneficiaries, they would have to now reimburse. So the insurance companies that paid out to the executor of the estate into the estate late account would then have the option to sue the beneficiaries, because they would now have found out, after investigations obviously had been conducted, that it was fraud.
Okay, yeah. Let's simplify it. What I think may have happened, let's just maybe see if we're on the same page. She was declared dead. The person who actually died was the husband, right? There is an estate there. Presumably, she was going to be a beneficiary,
correctly,
right?
So, yes.
Or maybe an executor.
Yes.
Who knows? But she had something to benefit, in other words, from her late husband's estate.
Yes.
But somehow, she herself was declared dead.
Yes.
Meaning that then was then passed on to somebody else.
Yes. So in the tweet, it goes a little bit more in detail. It states that her son is the one that killed her husband. So her son murdered her husband. Mm. And then there was a... She names people there in that tweet. There was a white lady, an attorney, who was appointed as an executor of the estate. The property that they live in, the house, is now possibly going to be put on sale as a result of the papers. Mm-hmm. So now, in order for that not to happen, she now has to ensure that she declares, like I said, to every department, including the master, to say that I am alive, I am here, so that anything that has happened under that particular case number can be halted. Any monies that have been spent, they can be recovered. A criminal case has to be opened. Investigation has to be done.
I was going to say, this would be a criminal case,
correct,
right?
Yes.
Go to the police station and so on.
Yeah.
I get the feeling when she says the NPA has failed her, it may mean that there has already been that process.
Yes, from what I can see in the tweet as well, she says that she went to the Bethlehem SAPS to assist her, and then it ended up in the NPA's office as a result, but then she's been given the runaround. So I don't know if she's very particular about the race issue, because she keeps insisting white this person, white person, that. Mm. So all the people involved in her case seem to be people who are white and who are just basically pushing her aside per what she has put in her tweet. So yeah, I think the best thing, if the NPA hasn't assisted her, she must go all the way up to the NDPP to see if she can get help.
Okay. Keep us posted. We will also share Ntabiseng Dubazana's details here. In fact, we'll tag her so that she can try and assist you if you do need any assistance at all. But quite a sad story, Patricia. Thank you very much for getting in touch with us. We are going to be talking about something else as well. Ntabiseng, you want us to talk about the Bill of Rights.
Yes, so it's the last day in our human rights, so to speak, month, and it's the long weekend.
Did you say we've got rights?
Yes, we do, in the Bill of Rights.
So I thought it was very funny when I was looking at some of these rights.
Yeah.
Especially if we decided Eddie now needs to be arrested, right? Eddie has a right to tell us what religion, and if he wants a pastor, an imam. And like, we have to stop and give him the chance, if he wants, to get his imam here.
Yeah.
If the imam is not here, he can refuse. Like, I want my imam right now. Did you know that you're right, Eddie?
You made him stop dating his tracks.
Did you know that you have a right to your imam right now? If the police came here, you can say, guys, stop. Before you take me, I need prayer. Okay? You're not taking me anywhere. I had no idea. I have never seen that. And you know what? I dare you, Ntabiseng.
Yeah.
If the police stopped me right now and I said to the policeman, Kahana,
Kebata
Murutuaga, I mean,
they're going to look at you funny.
They're going to say, I'm resisting arrest.
Yes.
And then they'll charge me with something else.
With resisting arrest, actually. That would be the charge.
Exactly.
Yes.
So I'm not sure if that's wise.
No.
I mean, I hear you.
Rather not do it.
I'm not sure it's wise for you, whoever you are out there. The police are trying to apprehend you, and then you say, I want my mom now. I can't. No one cares, eh? So let's talk about these rights, because I'm not sure all of them actually will be practical, but they're there anyway. So let's talk about it.
They're there and they ought to be exercised, but people don't know about it. So usually Section 35 of the Constitution, unfortunately, is used only when you are an accused. But there's so much case law that shows that Section 35 also applies to when you are a suspect. That's why I wanted to talk about it.
So you are saying the Section 35 applies only when you are already the accused.
No, it doesn't.
It doesn't.
It applies both when you're the accused
and
the suspect. Yes.
So, you know, we're all going to ask you about this case, Rene. Yeah, the speaker. Because this is where I think
the
murky waters, in the sense that what right do I have if I'm a suspect of a crime and the police suspect there's something in my house? Can they just come? There would be a search warrant, I suppose.
Correct.
They should have it.
They should.
If they don't
have
it, they can't come.
Correct.
Okay.
So when you are suspected of anything, right, when the police first come in contact with you, whether they're coming to arrest you or whether they're asking you to come and to the police station and give what we call a warning statement pertaining to this case, then that is when you your Section 35 rights automatically kick in. They don't kick in when you get to the police station, which is unfortunately what is done more often than not. You will be taken here, there, and everywhere before your rights are read to you. So point so this
you're
out.
You're saying that as they arrive, you want them to read the right.
They have to read that right to you, but they don't.
Because, Ntabi, saying you've got cases where people do find themselves... And it happens all the time.
Yes.
When they be, when they get vindictive with you, they will take you on a holiday, maybe public Obama Thursday night.
Yes,
Baba, you're going to be there for a while because Thursday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday is the this coming Monday is a
it's
holiday.
It's a public holiday, yeah.
And in that time, what rights do you have while you're in that holding cell?
This that we're talking about, these mm-hmm. are the rights that we're talking about. You have the right to be informed
yes.
why you're being detained.
Mm-hmm.
You have the right to know whether or not where you're going to be detained,
mm-hmm.
how long you're going to be detained. The Constitution says you are given 48 hours before you appear in front of a magistrate.
But
this is 48 hours excluding public holidays.
This is the problem. Would a Saturday be called a public holiday?
No, it's a normal... Saturdays, no. Sundays, yes.
So if we are counting, let's say,
no,
this weekend...
No, you're right. Saturday and Sunday
yes,
are...
Because if we're counting this coming weekend, as I'm saying...
Yeah.
They catch you on a Thursday night.
Yeah.
You are in trouble.
Yes.
Friday is Good Friday. Saturday, Sunday, Monday is Easter Monday.
Yes.
So as 48 hours, give 4 days.
Give 4 days.
And we haven't started the 48 hours
correct.
Counting.
Correct. Go. Correct. Mm. But in circumstances such as that, it is always prudent for the NPA to make sure that you at least appear on the Tuesday, considering that even though the 48 hours, which is the calendar days, or should I be specific, the court days, have not really expired, they're still covered by that. But it's practice that after those 4 days that they make sure that you appear on the Tuesday. And after within those 4 days, they must make sure that they have done their Section 57 investigation. So in other words, they have gone to verify your address, that you are going to be a problem should bail be granted, all those things, so that bail can be attended to on Tuesday.
What rights? Okay, let's say we understand.
Yeah.
4 days you are in there, it's hard luck. What rights do you have then? What can your lawyer do?
There is what we call after hours bail, right? So it's called also known as police bail and prosecutor bail.
Mm-hmm.
The reason is that these two different people can give you grant you bail without you appearing
in court.
In court.
Mm-hmm.
So police bail is for minor offenses, mm-hmm. theft up until I think it's less than 10,000 rand.
Mm-hmm.
You know, common assault. You know,
common
stuff
assault.
Like that. Common.
Not
assault GBH.
What's common?
Common is I pushed you.
Okay.
You know, and I happened to slap you. You know, stuff
so road
like that.
Rage har lwana mo le mokoleng.
Well,
and I take. Let's say I'm so angry with you. I take, I don't know, a pen or something, and I scratch your car.
You see, that's MITP, malicious injury to property. So yes, stuff like that. The police schedule one offense.
I can be let. They can just give me a little fine.
Yes.
Or it's bail.
Yes.
Police bail.
Don't ever pay an admission of guilt fine. Ever. Doesn't matter how
desperate
you are.
Do they tell you?
Not knowing that fine is now a previous conviction. So whenever you hear the words fine, you go like, no.
What fine is this? Is
yeah,
this
let me
police
understand.
Bail or is this fine?
Yeah, because if it's police bail, they're going to give you a copy of your bail slip that confirms that you paid X amount of bail and then you were released by Officer Mang Mang and you are to appear in court on day number so-and-so.
So, haya fela. You are
fail.
Still moving on to
correct.
Court.
Correct, so, yes.
Okay, the admission of guilt is what? It's they will take the money?
Yes.
You have declared yourself guilty?
Yes, and you will and sign a document.
You think it's finished, but it's there for good?
Yes. It is a previous conviction stuck to your name, no matter whether it's 100 rand or 500 rand.
But
AG
you are a criminal.
That's correct. That is correct.
Okay. We've got a voice note before we continue our look at Section 35. Let's take a listen.
Hey, Sanbonan. Quick one, man. My father passed on. Him and other four people actually had got a farm, but the farm is divided into four. As I'm speaking right now with you, I've been served a summons to actually evacuate the farm. Is that legal? But not by the government, by the guy next door. I don't know what more I can say. I'll try to write it down, though.
Okay. It would be nice to have you on the line, Wenazwane, if you don't mind, so that we can ask you other questions.
Yeah.
There are a few questions. By the guy next door, evacuating only you?
Doesn't
what about
sense.
The other three?
What about the other three? Yeah. And if the farm is divided into four, it means that at least there's a title, a sectional deed. Title deed that's supposed to belong to your father's estate. What has happened to your father's estate as well since he's
passed?
Have
you rounded up yet?
Yeah, what has happened there? And what do the particulars of claims say in the summons? What are they alleging? What kind of ownership or whatever?
And maybe there's another technicality. I think it would be good if you could call, because are the summons about eviction because maybe it was attached, maybe there's some stuff owing? What's the summons about? Let's just maybe get clarity on that, because maybe we are conflating a few issues in one thing here. Just so that we can clarify this, and Tabi saying, when there is a deceased estate,
yes,
and bills have to be paid and it's not happening because the person is deceased, right? What happens in the meantime? How do you make sure that no other legal action is enacted while this estate is being round up?
The executor or the agent that is appointed by the executor, i.e. the attorney acting, has to write to all the creditors. So that's why
including municipalities.
Correct. So that's why whenever we are finalizing an estate, we ask for what we call an inventory. So that we know what are the debts and what are the assets of the estate, so that we can write to everybody and inform them that this person is now late. We are currently winding up the estate. Kindly either halt on any interest on any debt, or when you are accumulating these debts, please send them to us, so that when the estate is, we're at the stage where we can distribute, we know who's that we need to pay. So when we draft the LND, the final LND account, we know that this amount is due to so and so and so and so, because the first people to get paid out are creditors, even before heirs and beneficiaries.
We do have Zwane back on the line. Thanks, man, Zwane, for calling. Good evening and welcome.
Hey, hello, how are you, lady?
We're good, man. Thanks for calling.
Okay, right. For the question of the estate being rounded up, it's not rounded up, because when my dad passed, my stepmother then took over. She became the executor of the estate. Okay? And then she passed on. Then I've been going to 66 with a tribe lost, and both the estates are still not rounded up. But the most important one right now is with the farm, because they've got the farm together as, I don't know, as partners. They've got a word for it. And what happens is this, right? I'm on portion 5. He's on portion 3, and the other guys are on portion 17 and so on and so forth. Because the farm had 4 houses in which this one's got this one. I'm on portion 5. I've been fighting this guy. He comes, he plows and he plants this side forcefully. And now what he has done, he has just sent me a summons to say I must evacuate the house, but it's not the government telling me to evacuate the farm, rather. As I think I've attached it on my WhatsApp there.
Okay, so from what I can gather, there's a sectional title maybe under your dad for that portion that he occupies, or there's an agreement between everybody there that confirms that this portion of the land belongs to him?
There is a different title deed, but they were doing it together. Like, you've got this portion, and that agreement is there. You've got this, your portion, portion 5, and.
Okay, as long as there's that agreement, there's no reason for this thing to go through? And is it a summons or is it an eviction application? Because those are two different things.
I think it's eviction. It's eviction application.
Yeah, no.
Eviction from an unlawful occupation of land. I've been here for more than 12 years.
Are you staying there, David?
I'm staying here currently.
Oh, I see.
Okay.
Oh, I see. I see exactly what it is. So he's saying you are not the person he's got an agreement with. That's what he's saying.
Yeah.
Because the person he has an agreement with is deceased now.
Has passed on.
Got you. All right.
No, he won't succeed. And this is why, you have to defend it. Because if you leave it, if you don't even put in a notice of intention to oppose, they most likely, not always, but they most likely will grant him the eviction. So what you need to do in your opposition, you need to inform in your replying affidavit, you need to inform that not only are you the child of the deceased, how long you've been residing there, and what it is that you are doing there, and currently that the estate is being wound up. Somebody has to continue the work from your stepmom to ensure that this property can now be transferred into your name so that you can continue to reside there. So if there are children born on between your dad and stepmom who are now your siblings, you guys need to agree who's going to be the executive.
No children.
So therefore, it's going to be difficult on your stepmom's estate, but on your dad's estate, you can take over. You can assume and go on because you are blood related to him. But it's going to affect horribly, in a manner of speaking, on your stepmom's side, because I'm assuming they were married in community of property.
Yes.
And does she have family members that are alive?
Yeah, they're in Bloemfontein. They don't really care. They just left everything. They got what they wanted.
Okay.
And yeah, so everything is just facing me.
Okay, so it's something that you would have to look at both estates, how far they are, and then wind them up in that manner. Because, it's going to be a little bit complicated, but you can at least show that there is an estate number that is open under your dad, that this agreement, you've been residing for this long in this property, and therefore the court shouldn't grant an eviction in that situation. Okay?
Okay. Where do I start? Like go to which court?
Whatever court that's cited there on the papers, right at the top of the papers, it must be in the regional court for so-and-so in the district of what. That court that's cited there, that's where you go. The very, very first page of the papers.
David?
Yes?
Are you following the paper? Have you got it in front of you?
Yeah, I'm following the paper.
Okay.
What does it
can
say right
it?
At the top, the very, very first line at the top?
Okay, our reference, C, Fan.
That's a lawyer.
Like a letter. That sounds like a letter.
Ah.
Okay, right. Okay, yeah, and then it gives my name and so on and so forth. And it says, by sheriff, attention to all friends, for the remainder of portion 5, Fami Notre Raj, 390 IR, Rotunda Heidelberg. And
you've got an attorney's letter.
Yay.
The court has not told you to leave.
The court hasn't even been notified as yet.
Oh yeah, no, I've just got a summons from the sheriff.
Does it have a letterhead on it? An attorney's letterhead. It's not anything to do with the court. Right now it's a notice. They are giving you a notice that they're going to institute eviction proceedings against you. There should be somewhere there in the body of that letter saying that after X number of days, it shouldn't be less than 14 days, because they have to give you between 14 and 30 days for you.
Yeah, it's 30 days. I don't know if you can see my WhatsApp. Actually attached it on the WhatsApp just after the voice note.
You know what, David? It's fine. We'll pull the attachment. And what we'll also do is we will make sure that we get in touch with you if you've got other questions offline, so that we can clearly direct you. But I think it's like someone just scaring him.
Yeah, it is not in court yet. It's far from being in court.
But the most important part, David, is to act. You don't just sit and do nothing. You act, right?
Yes.
Let's take a quick break and we'll be back with more after this.
Point of View. Monday to Thursday, 8 to 10 p.m. Ooh.
Thanks a lot for staying with us. Let's take your calls on 086-000-0959. We're looking at all your legal issues. You can also send a voice note on 063-688-0959. Thabiseng Dubazana is here, and at the end of the show, we'll give you her details. We will continue with taking those emails as well at pov@kaya959.co.za. You can also tweet us at Kaya on air, and you can tag me at Pimelo Modena. There's a voice note in Thabiseng.
I think you were coming along nicely with the questions there. So maybe after attending to this gentleman, you can continue on that point as to what are your rights now when you are being held there for that long weekend. Do you get held in the holding cell in the police station, or do they send you down to, is it Paulsmoor? What that prison that nobody wants to go to? Yeah. So where do you have the right to be held during that long weekend?
It's the weekend. It's coming.
Okay, so let's also talk about what you could be held for. Let us say you are just motherless drunk, right? Mm. You are just drunk, but in your drunken state, you are sore. You know how it is? And you are begging for your mother, your sister, your uncle, your brother,
yeah,
whatever. I'm sorry. But they caught you.
Yeah.
And you are so drunk, no one can allow you to drive. What are your rights then? But you are sore. You're a danger to society.
You're a danger to society. You see, there it is. This imminent danger to somebody, the next person, should they let you go. Mm. So the first thing that I think, I don't know if we've spoken about this before, the first thing you need to know is that they don't need your consent to draw blood.
Oh.
That's the first thing that you need to know.
Evan.
So as soon
so
as
you
they...
You don't blow anymore.
They will make you blow.
And then they will still take the blood.
They will still take you to the nearest nest or wherever and draw blood. And then they will
Wait. Can they arrest you without the blood? Because we've heard the stories. We've heard that somehow the labs... There's a story about the lab, but you are motherless drunk. We can all see there's no blood that needs to test and confirm that you are drunk.
Yes.
Can they take you in without the confirmation of the blood test?
Correct.
Okay.
Yes. So then you will then be detained police station. It's police station, ne? Mm-hmm. The nearest police station
where you were caught doing
whatever. So that's where you'll be detained for those 48 hours.
Wait. Can they arrest you and hold you until you are so-called sober?
They actually do that. They do that. They're like, you will go tomorrow, call somebody to come get the car, and then they'll come fetch you tomorrow. So usually in drunk driving cases, they actually do release you on police bail. It's usually $1,000. Mm. You will pay your police bail.
Sober up?
Sober up. The next day you go home and then you wait for between 9 months to 2 years for your blood alcohol to come back.
Okay.
And then eventually you will then receive a subpoena to say, come to court on this particular day to deal with your case.
Okay.
Yeah.
Before they give you the court stories.
Yeah.
As I said, you are sorry.
Mm.
And you are very sorry. What can happen in this time? Because I think a lot of things happen while you're in the cells.
The AG thing we were talking about just before we took the call. So because you're very sore, you want to go home, you want to be free, and then they tell
you... And you suddenly get sober.
Immediately. But they still won't let you drive because they still see that, you know, there's still alcohol somewhere in the system.
Mm-hmm.
So they may just say, you can pay your fine right now because it's a fine at the end of the day, but that fine also results in you having a previous
conviction. It's an admission of guilt.
Correct. Yeah.
All right. Yeah. All right. So there's no coming out of this one.
No.
If you're drunk, they catch you, they've caught you, you are either going to be signing and paying for an admission of guilt, or you are going to go to court after the bloods come back.
Correct. Sometimes if you can't pay police bail, you will end up spending Easter weekend.
Yes.
And then come Tuesday,
go to court,
apply for bail. It's usually not opposed. You will get your bail, and then you will appear two or three times, and then the state will provisionally withdraw the matter because the lab is going to take forever to bring your blood back, and then they will issue you a subpoena once your blood is back.
Okay, let's go to Pindile. We'll come back. There's more to ask. Okay. We'll go to Pindile in Rosebank. Hello, Pindile.
Hi, thank you so much, Pamela. Very interesting, and thank you for continuously just having engaging topics.
Wonderful.
My question is around a matter where, let's say, two cousins sell each other a property almost 30 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The children of the buyer are now of age and are trying to take over or have ownership and title deeds of the property. What has happened since is that the property was never changed over, and both the seller and the buyer are deceased. However, this was like extended family members, and there's an issue now of proving ownership. The buyer's children have been living in this house for 25 years, paying municipal what you call it, upgrades to the household. However, they now of age, let's say 30, they were five when their parents passed. There's now an issue of proving ownership for this household, or even the seller's children engaging them. They're just sticking by, we're not going to answer.
So yeah. the seller's children are saying, well, the ownership is still in our names, or our parents.
Yeah, they're basically now saying, well, tough. We know that growing up, we knew that your mom bought the house.
But however, it was now, never done properly.
Yes, never done properly. Now the issue is...
do they want to evict them?
The grandmother who was the estate is late. You know, so there's just a lot around...
Do they also want to evict them in the meantime?
They haven't said anything about it. They're just quiet. They won't answer calls. They, so you don't know where the headspace is at. So it's kind of that it's stagnant. And it's quite a hard one to say, do you want money? What do you think? You know, the property was sold. The elders knew. The elders have passed away. So just trying to understand what's the best way for that type of, I mean, after residing in a household for 25 years. But what else do the courts need to support for this?
Gotcha.
Where it was a family sold situation.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
So I'm assuming there was never a POP, the proof of offer to purchase, basically.
Absolutely not. What happened is before the deceased mom, who was the executor, she was all in agreement until the seller's kids have now grown. And their assumption is, well, there's nothing in place. So how do we actually prove this?
Yeah, no, it's a problem. There is really no way for us to prove this verbal agreement that was made between the two deceased parties, the seller and the buyer.
Isn't there really? If you have been a resident in that property and you've been paying utility bills, isn't that
30 years in? Yeah, that's what I was actually wondering on like the residency for almost 30 years, the upgrades, the neighborhood, the, you know, there's nothing from a customary, I don't know, I mean, clutching here, but just trying to understand.
I think, what's her name, Mids, would probably be the better one to answer this particular one.
Sure, Pindile, we are going to get you an expert.
Yeah.
I promise you, let's do that. We can pick up on this next week.
Yes, I will definitely consult with her or bring her here. So
yes,
she
let's
can,
do that.
Yeah, she can answer
Can we do
this
that,
problem.
Pindile?
Appreciated, both ladies appreciated.
Let's bring a conveyancer.
Yes.
Who can actually give you clear answers on this one.
Yeah.
Why are we like this?
There's no reason for there to be any fights. If it's a well-known thing, it should have been a situation of, you know what, let's just transfer the property now into your guy's name. A redistribution agreement, because both parties are now late.
No. Why would I do that? You have no paperwork? I realize there's value here. I realize there's no paper. And I'm just going to sit with my arrogance and just give you grief for a while. Why would I?
Just because you can.
Of course.
Yeah.
And what are you going to do?
No, nothing.
That's the thing.
Yeah.
And I think that's the answer. We need to find out what can they do.
Yes.
Because I'm absolutely sure. You know, in the end, hey, that the principle should be that law is for justice in the end. And I have a feeling there must be a way that justice can prevail here.
Not always, unfortunately, but I hope.
Says
a
lawyer. I mean, I was trying to redeem. I was really trying to redeem your profession here. And there you go, you know, telling me. Okay. All right. So let's come back to our little scenarios of what you can be brought into those cells for.
Yes.
So... it's the Easter. I've got my 101 family members over. I'm living in Sandton. And we must just summer slaughter. We are not only going to slaughter, ralilizela, humanati, and yeah, when my one drunk uncle is going to be saying, yay! My neighbor is not impressed.
Yeah.
First of all, my neighbor is going to call the police. Rarasa. Secondly, the neighbor is going to say, you did not get permission to slaughter. Agree, you know what happens.
Yeah.
Okay. So what should you be doing so that you don't get there? Let's start with the slaughtering business. You do need to get some authority, right?
It's not actually a law. It's a bylaw.
It's a bylaw.
Last I checked. And I think it was challenged in court. I just can't remember the exact case. And as a result, I'm not sure if that bylaw had to be amended. Mm-hmm. Because the argument was, if it is my culture that when
Gibulandru, I get a problem here. All of those things. The problem here with these laws is that everyone has rights.
Yeah.
So, including the animals. So, you next door are worried about the animals' rights.
Mm.
And I can guarantee you, there is no way we're going to slaughter that sheep or cow or whatever without tying a thing around its neck.
Yes.
So when you're going to tell me cruelty, and I'm thinking, Baba, this is what we do.
Yeah.
And there is no other way to slaughter. We have to tie it up.
Mm.
And we do what we have to do. So what I'm saying is that the problem here is that everyone has rights, yeah, including the animals.
Yeah.
So what do we do so that this thing does not disturb our relationship as neighbors?
The beauty of cruelty to animals, it's actually a criminal charge. I had to deal with it a few times back in the day.
Criminal charge.
Yeah, it's a criminal charge. Yeah? But it's defined.
But criminal charge. Yeah.
But it's clearly defined.
Ha, in my house. Criminal charge. Explain this properly. Criminal charge in my house. I pay for this damn thing. It's a criminal charge.
Yeah. So this particular case was relating to a dog, to be specific. Okay. So it was dog fighting and whatnot. So the way in which cruelty to animals is defined, what we are talking about, slaughtering for mosebe or anything, doesn't fall within that ambit. So they wouldn't
succeed. The issue here is that, why must I explain?
You shouldn't. That's what I'm getting to.
Hey, this is my house. I can do what I want
to
do.
This is what I'm getting to, because that case, I think I will come back with it.
Mm.
I'm going to research, because I remember there was a case that was taken to it. You know why
it may sound silly, but the point here is that, does it then mean by law, some animals are more valued than others by law? So you're saying the dog was more, you know, was more valued in this instance. If I were to slaughter a sheep, it would not be deemed criminal or cruel.
Yes. So that particular case, this person was breeding dogs for dog fighting and all of that. So that was deemed to be cruelty to animals.
Okay.
So in this particular instance, you're slaughtering for food, for consumption, because slaughterhouses are also made for that.
But yes.
So there really is no difference for that. That's why I want that case, because I know it was challenged.
Mm.
And I don't know if it went all the way up, but I know it was challenged. And as a result, that bylaw had to be changed. So I will go back and come back with that information next week so that we know what it stands. But when it comes to noise.
The noise, yes. Let's talk about the noise.
You're allowed to make as much noise as you want until 10 p.m. No one can tell you otherwise.
It makes no sense. You know what? It makes no sense. It starts getting hot. I mean, volume ya increase. Bafita bale alright.
Yeah.
And decent people are drinking tea.
Mm.
They start drinking stuff that's a little bit warm.
Irish coffee.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then by 6 o'clock, it's getting warm.
Yeah.
7. By 8. It's really hot.
Mm.
I must switch off a curtain.
That's what the bylaws say. Yeah, the bylaws say.
So okay, is the noise the noise of the sounds from the radio, or how much are you guys are noisy? From, I mean, it's so relative.
It is very relative,
because you know,
You know how we are.
It is. It has to be objective.
Because this noise thing, maybe we do not have a radio on.
Mm.
We're just happy.
I'm talking loud.
Well, no, we are happy. Yeah. We don't think it's loud. We are just happy.
Yeah.
And my family is here. We're happy.
Yeah.
And someone thinks we are noisy.
Mm.
Huh? Who's to? There's a decimal thing that we're going to be. I mean, and also, when the police come, when do they measure this level of noise?
They come first to investigate, quote unquote.
No, they will find us that we are men.
Yes, and then they may decide, Horina, when they arrive, did they actually meet up with a noise complaint that measures to what the bylaw says? Because the bylaw usually specifies that music, radio sound, up until whatnot should be switched off.
Mm.
But if it's a situation of us talking and we are happy, then it will be a very objective situation. Usually the police do not arrest people under those circumstances. But if the radio is on, they give you an opportunity first to switch it off.
Mm.
And if they come back again for a second time and you're still off, they probably give you a small yana warning. Third time, they will take you.
They don't switch off.
Yeah,
let's go. They take the owner.
Yeah, please, let's go.
And charge you with what?
Disturbance. Cannabis on charge, I think. I've seen it once, but we mediated and then it left. I'd only dealt with it once in my entire career.
Check your neighbors before you buy a home. That's all I have to say.
Point of View.
Monday to Thursday, 8 to 10 p.m.
Okay. All legal matters. And Ntabiseng Dubazana is here. You can give us a call on 086-000-0959. Mangaliso, thanks for calling. Good evening and welcome.
Hello, excuse me.
Hello.
Okay. No, man, I just wanted to find out, man. In a case where enforcement, the police enforcement was not properly conducted.
Sure.
For example, I get myself involved in an accident, and then somebody gets injured, maybe including myself, instead of now ensuring that, I'm taking good medical care, maybe to be rushed to the hospital just to ensure that they rather take you straight to their doctor to draw blood.
Mm-hmm.
Whether you're injured or not, they don't care about it. It's just a guy moving in there, and they are not driving their hands about blood, They don't even care for injured. So I just wanted to find out, can I maybe take the police to court for that? And then I just want to find out what would the outcome be, because, usually when we take the state to court, the case that thing, they either take long or out in court.
Okay.
All right. So you do have a right to have medical attention while you're under the custody of the police, ne? It has to be state. No, those in order for you to be taken to a state hospital to be checked out with where J88, and like you're saying that you were involved in an accident, that J88 will actually work to benefit that actual crime scene, to see who was injured or not. So they did fail you in that instance. It will be a situation wherein you would sue them for failure to execute or to assist you. In terms of Section 35, né? What I'm not sure is how much you could get out of that. Usually, you would probably get what your medical bills cost you at that instance, because it wasn't as a result of their direct actions that you ended up in the accident. It just happens to be that when they were arresting you, you were already injured from the accident. I don't know if I'm making any sense to you.
Yeah, no, I get you.
Okay, all right.
Thank you. Thanks, Mangalis. Okay, let's talk about more serious stories where there's maybe a domestic violence or a dispute.
Yeah.
It's not necessarily even call it a violence, because I think sometimes where things get quite murky, picking up on Mangaliso's issue of wrongful arrest sometimes.
Yeah.
Where, it's a long weekend, as you said, it's nice, and we are maybe even on a date, who knows, or whatever. And then I accuse, we have a dispute. It's a dispute because I'm not necessarily calling it an offense.
Mm.
It's a dispute. We somehow get to a point where after having a good time, one of us decides the following day, you raped me.
Ah.
Right?
Yeah.
And suddenly, poor guy finds himself, police are here and they arrest and has no idea what's this about.
Yeah.
Right? What rights does that guy have? Because the unfortunate thing, as Mangaliso says sometimes, yes, in the end, you may find that, yes, we prove that you were fine, you didn't do anything wrong. But this entire process, while this is happening, what rights do you have?
The same rights as any other person who's arrested, the same rights that we are talking about will be afforded to that person. What is very unfortunate about what you just described happens more often than not. And then it's always the man who is assumed to have taken advantage of the woman who was not in their sound and sober senses. But if it we know that for a fact we both were drunk out of our minds, we were happy and all of that. I also, as a man, quote unquote, was not in my sound and sober senses. Why can I not open a case against you for raping me? But then, unfortunately, that's just how swayed or biased or whatever that our court system is
like. So can you counter? So can you counter as this person opens a case against you immediately?
Yeah.
Can you open another case of defamation or something?
Even rape. You can also open a case of rape against that person as well.
Don't say I don't like you guys. Huh? Guys, you see? You see? There's always grace somewhere. There's always a light at the end of the tunnel. Yeah. So you can open yourself another case.
Yes. And then they can run in court together.
Yeah.
Counterclaims.
Ntanangani.
Yeah.
Ne? It's better that way. Before you come and say, I've been going through this whole thing on my own. But I mean, of course, you've got to be clear about your facts.
Yes.
So, you know, just don't do it for fun. You've got to be clear about the facts. So you can find yourself being wrongfully accused. And if you feel that you are, go ahead toe to toe with this person.
Yes.
Do it, you know.
Yeah.
Luena, be a victim.
Correct. So, yeah.
Okay. So we spoke about the insistence of me asking for my priest.
Oh, yes.
And I mean, it's not funny. It's true, ne?
It's fair, yeah.
So at which point can I ask for my priest?
So the act is specific to say once everyone who's detained, including a sentenced prisoner, has the right to be informed properly of their rights, blah, blah, blah. But this part that we are looking for...
You can...
To communicate with and be visited by your spouse or partner, next of kin, chosen religious counselor. Is that the one you're referring to?
Is it one or?
Any of these people.
You can have them all three there.
You can
have your legal representative, your next of kin, and your priest come.
Yes. But then obviously the wherever you're being held, they'll have time slots for each. Sometimes you're not allowed to see all of them at the same time, but you are allowed to see
and your medical practitioner.
Yes. They have you it's your chosen one. They are obligated to give you state funded medical care. But if your family has a GP that can go see you there, they do not have the right to deny you that.
So I can have my doctor, my priest,
yes,
my next of kin,
yes,
my lawyer.
Yes.
Fantastic. Okay. Can I choose not to be in a cell with particular ex-criminal? In other words, I don't feel I'm a hardened criminal.
Yeah.
Mine was just a little drunken situation. And I'm sitting here with Yeman. Yeah. Serious criminals, yeah.
Yes.
And I feel actually I'm in danger. Can I refuse to be in a cell with these people?
Usually correctional services tend to section people.
No, police station. I get it. This is now happening on a Friday night. Friday night, I just happen to have been drunk. Nah.
Mm.
But then they also caught guys who were busy with, I don't know, a heist.
So,
and we are in the same cell.
Yeah. So
and I feel very unsafe.
Yeah. Subsection E, you have a right to have conditions of detention that are consistent with human dignity, including at least exercise and the provision of state expense of adequate accommodation, nutrition, reading material, and medical treatment. So that is as far as it goes. It doesn't particularly say that you can choose where you can be held or with whom you can be held in that situation. But I believe that ought to be revised. And I'm saying this because there was a case recently where, unfortunately, a lady who was arrested for something minor was detained in the holding cells with a gentleman who, unfortunately, was not mentally all there.
Oh, yes.
And that person ended up raping her. So that is a whole situation on its own.
Guys.
And, you know, going to trial with that with a person who's not mentally there, the likelihood of her seeing any justice is very slim to none. There's also been instances wherein accused persons were assaulted by others, hardened or not, or bad cabana, whatever the case may be. And then it was my corner. You know?
And yay. Move, it's my corner.
They always say pick on the big, the bigger guy when you get in there, then you cause a problem.
It's my corner.
You know? So those things, I think, something that it should be looked at and reconsidered. But unfortunately, police holding cells are not made to hold too many people. So they're very minimal. There's two or three holding cells at most in police stations. So you're all going to be crammed in there.
The treatment of the the treatment of the person that is held by the police
is appalling most times. Yeah, it's appalling. And here it says that you shouldn't be treated that way, but it happens in exactly the opposite. You're supposed to be treated with human dignity at the end of the day. Yes, you are currently a suspect.
So usually they use this obstruction of justice and you are also resisting arrest and all of that.
Yeah.
You know, it's very difficult to argue with an aggressive police person who's telling you, yay, Oksalayo, I'm going to beat you. And I know that I can argue that you are resisting arrest.
Yeah.
Right? So how do you balance that out?
I would love to say stay firm in your ground and everything, but you're going to get beat down.
It's not good advice.
You're going to get beat down, or not actually, they won't beat you down because they know that it would leave marks. But they won't play. They will tube you, which will make you feel like you're drowning, but you're not drowning, and all of that. I've been doing criminal law long enough. I was with legal aid for long enough for us to know what really happens in these situations. So the kind of treatment that you will receive is treatment that's not going to leave any mark on you. So therefore, it's always going to be your word against your arresting officer at all times. So in as much as these rights are present and there for you to use, they are not readily available, if I can say that.
So there's the legal advice and then there's the reality.
Yeah.
Don't do it.
Yeah.
Just keep quiet. Just say yes, ma'am, yes, sir. And if you can, speak very little English.
Very little. Very, very little. Like,
don't speak English.
As legal practitioners, I want to share this.
English is going to get you into trouble.
When we went to go do police bail, I remember, and here I am thinking, Hori, you know, but then now you're talking to somebody who's agitated. This is my first time doing police bail. I got so agitated. And then the lawyer came out, but Kanti, but it's a lawyer, mihe. Yeah. So even lawyers, when they go there, you won't believe that person is an attorney because,
yeah,
they know nothing when they get this. Their client can get bail.
Don't be a clever black.
Please don't.
Yay. Leave the English behind.
Yes. Yes.
And leave your English behind. Humble yourself.
You don't even know the law.
And we know you know. Pretend like you don't know.
Yes, you just don't know the law. Leave it at that.
Okay. What can they feed you and what should they feed you? And if they can't feed you, can you ask for somebody to give you food?
You are permitted to request food. It can be brought to the cells, but obviously has to go through checking points first to ensure that you're not sneaking in a weapon or drugs or whatever the case may be. You are required to be given food that's going to be nutritious and healthy and all of that. You're not entitled to sushi. You know, but at least Papa Kamoronya, something that is healthy enough and
to sustain the issue of abolition facilities.
How does that work? At a police station especially?
In holding cells, there's one in for the entire cell.
Mm-hmm.
So all of you use that. Sometimes for the ladies, there is an option for outside of the particular cell, but you need to be accompanied by one of the officers. So each police station there depends on what it looks like. It. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. All right, guys. So next week, we will try and bring Convencer to try and sort that other matter out. And then for David, we will then... In fact, let's give your details out.
Yes. So our email is info@dubazanaattorneys.co.za. Otherwise, a WhatsApp on 079-654-7523. And then alternatively, call our landline 087-265-8010.
Thank you, Ntabi Seng. Always a pleasure. Thank you.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.